Call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. We do have a quorum. The first order of business is approval of our minutes from February 20th, 2023. Representative Katisa Watoon, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move approval of the February 20th minutes.
Representative Katisa Watoon moves approval of the minutes from February 20, 2023. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes from February 20th, 2023 are approved. The first bill on our agenda is House File 1677 from Representative Kraft. Representative Kraft, would you like to move your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1677 to be re-referred to Health, Finance, and Policy.
Representative Kraft moves House File 1677 be re-referred to Health, Finance, and Policy. And Representative Kraft, you have the A2 amendment. Would you like to offer the A2 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair. The A2 puts the bill in the form that I would like to be considered.
Representative Kraft moves the A2 amendment, which is an author's amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Kraft, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think we all know that the pandemic really impacted mental health, and I imagine most of us either know someone firsthand or certainly secondhand that has been impacted. Worldwide, the rates of depression and anxiety have gone up over 20%. And even prior to the pandemic, people seeking mental health treatment often faced care networks with an insufficient amount of providers and long wait times, often having to go out of network to obtain care. The result of that would be paying substantially higher co-payments, sometimes to the level of preventing them from getting the care they need. This has only been made worse by the pandemic. So this bill does four things. First, and this is in section one of the bill and lines 1.1 to 1.6 of the A2 amendment, is around general network adequacy, or are there sufficient service providers in an insurance network? The base criteria used today is whether there is a provider within 30 miles or 30 minutes, regardless of whether that provider is accepting new patients. So this bill adds new criteria for network adequacy so we can more adequately assess a network by focusing on whether people can actually obtain an appointment. Second, in section two of the bill, which is also amendments in the amendment line 17 to 120, this is recognizing that we are in a mental health crisis. So for the next 2 years, the bill would require health plans to accept any willing mental health provider that will accept contract terms the insurance provider already has, so that we can make it easier for children and adults to access mental health care. Third, which is section three of the bill, and to assist our mental health providers, health plans will need to use the same filing timelines and prior authorization processes consistent with Medicaid fee-for-service. And lastly, to think more longer term, the bill requires MDH to study the overall network adequacy issue and come back with long-term recommendations by January of 2024. And this is section four of the bill. So the bill does something to immediately address the crisis and then directs MDH to study the overall network adequacy issue longer term. And, you know, before this, I've heard many stories of how hard it is to find mental health providers, which is a key reason I wanted to carry this bill. And since it's been dropped, several more people have reached out to me affirming that. There's two testifiers. Sue Abderholden from NAMI here next to me will speak to studies that show that access to mental health treatment is a frequent, if not the main driver, of the use of out-of-network providers. So this is a crisis, and we can make it better right away with this bill, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. We'll turn next to testifiers, and we have Sue Abderholden from NAMI here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Proceed your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And as we all know, we are experiencing a mental health crisis. The pandemic has led to significant increases in anxiety and depression in adults, but even more so in our children and youth. Our mental health system was fragile and barely able to meet the needs prior to the pandemic, and now it cannot come close to meeting these increased needs. While there are many things we can do and are attempting to do this session, there are steps that this committee can take to increase access to mental health treatment during this critical time. Currently, network adequacy for mental health is determined by a plan having providers within 30 miles or 30 minutes. If plans can't meet that criterion, they can apply for a waiver. In my quick count this weekend, I found that there were 653 waivers granted, and only 8% were for mental health. But we've heard countless stories about children having to wait months. The worst I heard was last week, 18 months to even access a therapist. We know children are boarding in the ER as they wait for residential care or intensive outpatient care. Clearly, the criteria, miles and minutes, is not an adequate measure of network adequacy. It doesn't tell us if providers are taking new patients or what the wait times are. I keep hearing from providers who are seeking out contracts from health plans and are denied because they are told that they already have enough providers in their network. Yet these providers are talking to the in-network providers down the street and are learning that they have long wait lists. The Milliman report, which examined claims data related to mental health parity, found that behavioral health care providers were 5.2 times more likely to be out of network than other med-surg outpatient, and that over 5 years, the disparity increased 500%. The Government Accounting Office issued a report and found that other states look at providers, provider-to-enrollee ratios, maximum appoint times, percentage taking new patients, and diversity of providers. The other issue that enrollees often have is the directories being inaccurate. In one review, only 47% of the providers listed were accurate. The problems with accurate mental health providers listed was the most common issue. My national office did a survey, and they found that 1 in 4 respondents did not have an in-network therapist, compared to only 1 in 10 that did not have a network medical specialist. I want to remind the committee that when you go out of network, there are higher out-of-pocket costs. Yet when people are desperate to obtain care, especially for their children, they will pay this higher amount. They will go into debt in order to obtain care. I want to read part of a letter sent to me about this issue. It's from Amanda, who wanted to testify today but couldn't make it. She wrote, "In August 2021, I was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. I contacted my insurance provider to request a referral to a mental health provider who works with persons who have a terminal illness. I was given 6 names. 4 specialized in adolescent dialectical behavior therapy, not appropriate referrals in my opinion. One of the other 2 was located more than 20 miles from my home in St. Paul. The other person waited a few weeks to return my call. She had an immediate opening. She claimed to have experience working with persons who are dying, but it was pretty clear her experience was based on a sample of 1, a family member, who died some years ago. The questions she asked in our initial session were inappropriate. I discontinued therapy with this psychologist after 2.5 sessions. I'm actually a mental health professional. I know how to seek referrals and access services. I chose to go through my insurance because I could not afford to go out of network. I was appalled at the options provided to me." This bill does several things to address this disparity. 1, it requires a study of network adequacy while also beginning to look at different criteria that will actually measure whether someone can access care. This includes wait times and looking at being able to meet the needs of diverse populations. The second measure is to allow any willing provider during the next 2 years in order to greatly expand the network of mental health professionals to increase access to care. We are in a crisis and we need to respond to it. And third, we want to reduce the burden on our providers who have to deal with different timelines for submitting and resolving billing issues under Medicaid managed care. Providers who take Medicaid are not getting their bills paid because of short timelines, and frankly, it's not fair. I think that this is an important first step in increasing access, but I wanted noted that it won't be the last step we need to take. We need to see the full implementation of mental health parity, but right now, we need to increase access to mental health treatment to achieve the best outcomes for our children, our loved ones, for ourselves. NAMI and the Mental Health Legislative Network encourages your support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. We also have Dan Andreessen from the Council of Health Plans. Mr. Andreessen, come forward. State your name for the record. Proceed to your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Appreciate Representative Kraft and Ms. Abbott-Holden reaching out to us about this bill. We want to be partners in finding collaborative solutions to the mental health crisis here in Minnesota. And we've talked quite a bit about this bill. I would say that there are a few pieces that do make us a little nervous, but we appreciate that the language in Subdivision 2 is for 2 years. And there's a couple more things that we, are currently still talking through. So, we're committed to continue to work on this bill as it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the people who signed up to testify. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify to this bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill, Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kraft. I wanted to just get a little bit more clarity on how the must credential and enter into a contract language on page 3 works. And I understand there's some a certain amount of the terms that are, I think we're dictating to that contract. But in the event that those contract negotiations break down about, related to potential negotiations that we're not requiring specification on, like the payment rates need to be usually and customary. If there's some disagreement between the health plan and the provider about those contract terms, do you know, or maybe House, or maybe non-research, or someone can help us to understand how does that logjam get broken under this bill?
Start with Representative Kraft, if you want to take it, or you want me to direct that question elsewhere?
You can direct that elsewhere. I'd appreciate that an answer.
Turn to Ms. Pompu.
Chair and members, the only reference I can make is to line 3.6, where the health care provider has to agree to the health plan company's terms.
Representative Niska.
Thank you. So, yeah, okay. I appreciate that.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a follow-up on that. Just making sure I understand how the bill is written. In Section 2, we have subdivision A, B, C, and D. So do Sections C and D also... Does subdivision B apply to C? Does that make sense? Because there... or particularly D, a health plan company must credential a mental health provider that meets the health plan company's standards. But does that line 3.6 still apply to D, or are they separate independent subdivisions?
Ms. Pompa.
It looks like I've got lots of people confused. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Chair and members, B is a standalone paragraph that applies from July 1st, 2023 to June 30th, 2025.
Mr. Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. So while I actually have had conversations with Representative Kraft about the bill, and I think that particularly that paragraph B, I think, makes a lot of sense. We talked about that, especially that, you know, they have to agree to the health plan company's contract terms, so they can't just create their own contract terms. But I am concerned that paragraph B and paragraph D are independent of one another. And paragraph D does not fall under that that timeline that expires in 2025. So, and I'm going to assume that was probably oversight, that those timelines were meant to apply across the board, but I think that is a concern that we should probably consider when we're looking at meeting those short-term needs. But then the rest of the bill has a lot of information gathering and studying to make sure that we are in a good place in the future, that we at least have the data that we need to make good decisions into the future. But I would be concerned about that Section 2 as it is written now, that, like I said, that paragraph D is independent of paragraph B and would therefore not be subject to those timelines. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative New Brindley, it certainly wasn't the intent that way, so we'll look at that and appreciate the input and suggestion and
we do
address that.
Yep, and I think this goes to your point, Representative New Brindley. There is another committee stop after this for this to continue to work on this.
And if you have specifics you'd want to share, fine, but I think we understand the point.
Great. Any other discussion to the bill? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate hearing from NAMI and from others on this. The overarching question that I have, and I don't know that we're going to necessarily be able to resolve or there's an answer today, but when you are an insurance payer, you negotiate contracts with different clinics, different groups and things. There are different price points that are available for reimbursement, and it's a package deal. The concern that I have is not so much that we're doing it in this one specific situation, but do we also now get the Me Toos that are coming in and wanting to do this? And then what does that do to the insurance payer when working with providers? Does that dilute the entire process? And so I'm a little concerned that this could be that old adage of the camel's nose under the tent, that we could have individuals wanting to come in and cherry pick or sidestep some of the other kinds of things. For example, cardiac related things, the reimbursement level is much higher on those kinds of things. What we hear from heart surgeons and others, they'll say, well, we'll do it for whatever the contracted rate is. And when the insurance companies put these reimbursement plans together, they figure a certain number of people within the group that they're insuring to try to determine premiums and rates and different things. And I'm just concerned that that at some point could have a negative impact on the actual results of dollars collected versus dollars going out by the insurance company, because the pool hasn't been rated according to what was originally anticipated or originally bargained for. Again, I don't know that there's an answer to that today, but I think there's something that bears some monitoring. And again, I think Mr. Andreessen, although he didn't say that, said there's some work that needs to be done. That would be something that would be glaring to me from my experience in the industry.
Representative Kraft.
Chair Stevenson.
And actually, I think I'm just going to say I don't see any other people wishing to be recognized, so maybe you can just go okay. Right into your closing comments after you make the
thanks,
response.
Chair Stevenson, Representative O'Driscoll. I'm not fully sure I follow everything you're saying, but you know, this I got involved with this, and this bill is focused at the mental health crisis. So that's what this is focused on. So I'm not planning on extending it to other areas. So just to close, what I would say is that building on that, this is a focused response to the mental health crisis we're in. I want to thank Sue Aberholden here of NAMI for bringing this to my attention. I also want to thank Dan Andreessen of Minnesota Health Plans for his efforts in working with us in a collaborative way in responding to the bill. We have a few more areas to discuss before this goes to its next stop, but we've had productive discussions, and I think we've reached agreement on several areas. So with that, I urge your support.
All right, Representative Kraft renews his motion that 1677 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Health Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and House File 1677 as amended is recommended to be referred to the Health Finance and Policy Committee. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1989. And as Chair Moeller comes down, I will ask Representative Katiza Watun if she has a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 1989 to be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee.
Representative Katiza Watun moves House File 1989 be recommended to be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Chair Moeller, you have the DE3 amendment, which I will move on your behalf and allow you to describe.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be probably easier if we can get the amendment adopted because it's the entire bill.
So it's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that the... I'd like the committee to consider it. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the DE3 amendment is adopted. Representative Moeller, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1989, the bill that was born out of the Ticketmaster debacle when Taylor Swift tickets went on sale. When T. Swift's Eras tour was announced, I was excited to get tickets to take my niece to the show. Other Swifties and I signed up with Ticketmaster as verified fans. Ticketmaster told us that we would receive a code for use at the presale and that this process would reduce scalpers obtaining tickets so that fans could purchase tickets. Unfortunately, I never received a code and was instead put on a waiting list. I looked forward to purchasing tickets when they went on sale to the general public, but that day never came because the tickets were gone. And for those who did receive the presale code, the process was an utter disaster. Some people, like my friend Melissa, waited in the virtual queue all day long, and when it was finally their turn to purchase tickets, Ticketmaster booted them out, and they had to get back in the virtual line. When others were lucky enough to make it through the process, the tickets were outrageously priced. There were also unknown fees attached to the tickets.
A young woman I know named Laura set a personal cap of $500 per ticket and was stunned to make it all the way to the end of the checkout to find out that Ticketmaster added $100 in fees to that $500 ticket. But at that point, it was really too late for her to back out of the tickets to try to get a cheaper one for fear that she would not get any. I know many people who are on their computers and or their phones all day long in order to obtain tickets, and I truly wonder how much productivity was lost in the U.S. that day, both at work and at school. And while the T-Swift failure displayed many of the problems with the ticketing industry, and the disaster there occurred on a very big and public scale, there consistently have been problems in this industry. About 15 years ago, I bought tickets to a Wiggles concert to attend with my toddler, and I paid more in fees than I paid for the tickets. And just yesterday, I purchased tickets from Ticketmaster's competitor for the women's Big Ten basketball tournament this weekend in Minneapolis, and I paid an 83% increase in the tickets for the fees, 83%. As a result of the T-Swift fiasco, I began educating myself about the ticketing industry. And the problems are numerous for consumers, including dynamic pricing that aggressively drives up prices, exorbitant fees, lack of transparent pricing, unscrupulous scalpers, fraudulent and deceptive behavior in the resale market, and a monopoly created by the Ticketmaster merger with Live Nation in 2010. This merger has resulted in one company being the event's promoter, venue operator, and ticket seller, controlling a majority of the ticketing and live event venues market. Recently, there was a bipartisan congressional hearing led by Senator Klobuchar about the industry. House File 1989, as amended, only seeks to solve a fraction of these problems and is primarily a bill about transparency. First, it includes all-in pricing, which requires that ticket sellers disclose all the fees and charges to the consumer up front, so there are no surprises like my friend Laura encountered when she had that $100 markup at the end of the process. Second, it forbids ticket resellers, particularly those companies in secondary markets, from trying to fool consumers into thinking their websites are the ones that are the primary ticket sellers. Third, the bill attempts to be transparent about the fees charged in the resale market and prevent the double dipping of fees that happens when a ticket is sold and then resold by the same ticketing company. Fourth, the bill prevents speculative ticketing, which is a practice where resale companies sell tickets before they've ever even been sold in the primary market. And fifth, it creates enforceability through a private right of action. Aspects of this bill came from both laws in New York and Nevada. And members, I don't have any testifiers, but I look forward to your questions as we work together to craft a law to protect Minnesota's consumers.
All right. We are going to open up to the public for testimony, and I see there's a member of the public who wishes to speak. So if you want to come forward, state your name for the record and proceed to your testimony. Thank you for testifying today.
Hi, my name is Mark Hughes, and Kelly Moeller happens to be my rep and doing a fabulous job wherever that is I live. I don't get there very often, but I thank her for what she's done. I want to help her on this bill. Now, she stated one of two or three cases that Ticketmaster has had. This goes all the way back to the North Stars, the Minnesota Wild, what have you. When you are disabled, you find that you purchase a ticket to get in the door, but then you bring your own chair to sit in a marking on the floor. It's an insulting ripoff with the charge and the handling and this and that and the other thing. Now, we're not looking for the big deal today or to spin the prize wheel. However, we are looking to become down to more realistic terms on expenditure and revenue. Now, I happen to know who the owner is of the Minnesota Wild. He played for the St. Paul Vulcans. His wife is Mop and Glow. Her family runs Mop and Glow. So obviously they're not hurting for money. But the business, here's my take. business and the public need to work together when it comes to sporting events. But the people that own these teams and the sporting events shouldn't take advantage of the general public as they have to Kelly and maybe me. I don't know. But I want this looked into. It needs to look into it. It should probably go to Keith Ellison. He's got plenty to do, but we could probably find one more thing for him to do. Because this is an exorbitant ripoff, and it really makes me mad to see what's going on. And I look funny, but I'm not as stupid as I look. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other members of the public wishing to testify today? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion to the bill. Discussion to the bill. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moeller. This is really close, I think, to something that should get bipartisan support, and so I appreciate the work that you put into it. I did have a couple of questions. One was related to the potential for federal action. I just was curious as to how does this bill interact with if the federal government does do something in this space potentially. Is that something we should be concerned with?
Representative Moeller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Representative Niska, for that question, and I am looking at that, too. I've been in contact with Senator Klobuchar's staff. I've shared this language with them. I think one of the things that they're looking at more closely is the merger issue between Live Nation and Ticketmaster, not that they're not looking at ticket pricing and transparency as well, but I think there's a place for them to do their work, for us to be able to fix some of these issues in Minnesota, and, of course, you know, I think the chances of us being able to pass something for our state probably are higher than the chances of Congress passing a bill. But I do think some of those greater issues around the merger are issues that they're really focusing on as opposed to what we're doing with this bill.
Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, Representative Moeller. I just was curious if you can, I'm concerned or confused about how does if a season ticket holder for the Wild, they have tickets that they want to sell. How does this change the way that they navigate that landscape? Is it going to create some kind of problem for just the average season ticket holder trying to resell their tickets?
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the answer is no, and it has to do with the definitions. If we could turn it over to nonpartisan staff, I know there's I believe there's an exclusion for individuals.
Ms. Pompeo?
Chair and members, the bill doesn't really deal with the individual seller side because the seller will be interacting through the online marketplace or the ticket reseller. So an individual will be using the platform, and the platform would be the ones responsible.
I also note, I think it's online, maybe this is what you were talking about, Representative Moeller, on line 2.1. Ticket reseller does not include a person that purchases a ticket solely for their own use or for their or the use of their invitees, employees, or agents who purchase a ticket off the others and resells the tickets. So I don't know if that also gets to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the language I was specifically looking for, but Ms. Pompeo actually helped answer that further, too. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moeller, for clarifying that. I think that's helpful for people to understand. My next question relates to actually the question that the testifier raised, which is, you know, he said maybe the Attorney General should be looking into this. Is there, I don't see, at least in the way, at least it's not obvious to me, whether there is some sort of broader state enforcement authority that would deal with. I mean, we're talking about potentially a large number of individual claims that might be better dealt with by the state attorney general or by some other state enforcement agency. Is there a mechanism like that in the bill, or is that something you're still working on?
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is something when we were trying to craft this, how did we want to create enforceability? And that's something I continue to work on, and I welcome your partnership with me in that. I do know that under Chapter 8.31, the Attorney General does have some broad enforcement authorities. And so I'm still trying to learn how that interplays with what we're doing here. And I do think that's a further discussion that we can have before the Judiciary Committee where this is heading. Like I said, I'd love to work with you on that.
Representative Niska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question relates to the, I appreciate that, by the way, and let's talk more before we get to Judiciary maybe. I was curious about whether there's anyone else we should be considering possibly having a right of action. I mean, I think there's a scenario, I think, where operators of venues might be injured by violations of this law. Currently, the private right of action is limited to individual purchasers, which obviously we should be concerned about. But, you know, if someone is actually putting on a show and they want to comply, but some other actor is violating this law, maybe we should consider whether they have what their remedies are and whether we need to make sure that they have remedies for that as well. So if you want to respond to that, that's great. Otherwise, that's my, I guess, final point on this. I do appreciate the work you're doing on this bill.
Representative Moll.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is something I'm considering as well. I mean, ultimately, we want to make sure we're protecting consumers. But the question is, how do we best do that? Maybe it does make sense to pull in some of the venues as well.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moeller, you and I have spoken on this bill on a couple of occasions, and in your opening comments today, you referenced an entertainer by the name of Taylor Swift. And I'm just wondering if the bill number of 1989 and the person who you led your testimony with today is coincidental or intentional. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, when I dropped this in the hopper, staff was standing right there, and they told me House File 1989 was available, and it just seemed too good to be true.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sort of harkens back to a bill that dealt with the sale of marijuana that was labeled 420 a few years ago. So people around here do have a sense of humor.
All right. I don't see any further members. Oh, Representative Cagle, pardon me. Oh, I'm sorry. There's a couple people on the list. I should look at the list before I say
there
there's no
go.
One on it. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moeller, in my wildest dreams, I can't imagine being able to shake off the fees that cause all this bad blood. And I really wish we would see blank spaces where these fees are on our bill, but we're not out of the woods yet. So I really thank you, Representative Moeller, for bringing House File 1989 and allowing me to get all these song lyrics or song titles from that album in this. And I also have a bill based on a Taylor Swift song, Midnight Snow, and it's my Amazon fee bill, the It's Me, I'm the Problem. So thank you.
It really took all of my strength to not gavel you out of order on that one. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moeller, look what they made us do. I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. Myself, I had a couple of bizarre experiences, not only trying to buy tickets for Taylor Swift, which, you know, we do so much of our everyday life on our mobile phones these days, but every time I was in the queue and I like had to move to a different app on my phone, you know, check my email, do whatever I might have been doing, it kicked me out. So it was like every time it wasn't set up for people to be even trying to purchase these tickets and stay in the queue for 10 plus hours, as you alluded to earlier. But then I also bought tickets to Billy Joel, for those, you know, of a different generation perhaps. And we got to the last page there, and the fees that you mentioned were a third of the ticket cost. And so it really was just crazy. And Representative Kegel already stole my reference to a blank space on that final fee page. But I think that this is a really good bill. I appreciate some of the – sounds like we might have some bipartisan support for it, and I appreciate all your work. Thank you.
Okay. Now seeing no further people seeking to discuss this, I will turn it over to Chair Moeller for final words.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank nonpartisan and partisan staff for their help with this bill. I also received some technical assistance from the Attorney General's office and input from both Ticketmaster and Live Nation. You're not done with the song lyrics yet. You kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's all right. I thought about Taylor Swift songs and how they could fit into this presentation about House File 1989, which, as you know all too well, is one of her albums. And never in my wildest dreams did I think I would work on a bill like this. But I was a mad woman after the TS ticketing debacle. My family told me to shake it off, and others said, you need to calm down. However, this is me trying to do something positive about the situation. And some may say that this is just a champagne problem, but I think a bipartisan effort could bring together the left and the right in a love story that benefits Minnesota's consumers. In all seriousness, while this bill may not be the most crucial issue we work on this session, it will make a difference for Minnesotans who love attending concerts and sporting events. I welcome any of you who want to work together on this issue. There is a blank space on the bill for your names. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew Representative Tisa Watun's motion that House File 1989, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and House File 1989, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is House File 2000, and I will hand over the gavel to Representative Katisa Whitfield.
Mr. Chair, once you're settled in up there, go ahead and move your bill.
I need to see where we're sending it to. Sorry.
All right.
Madam Chair, I move House File 2000 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee.
So Chair Stevenson moves that House File 2000 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 2000 is the bill to legalize sports betting in Minnesota. And for returning members, the bill will be very familiar because I would say is 90% plus the same bill that passed with bipartisan support off of the House floor last year. There have been some changes to the structuring of the licenses between the state and the tribal nations of Minnesota. Last year's bill included a hub and spoke system. This year's bill directly licenses the tribes. But beyond that, it is largely the same, both in terms of what activity would be permitted and how it would be permitted and regulated. As members may know, sports betting, the states became able to legalize sports betting with a Supreme Court decision in 2018. And since that time, more than 30 states, including every state that borders Minnesota, has legalized sports betting in some form or fashion. Minnesotans deserve the same opportunity that all of our neighbors have to bet in a legal, safe marketplace with consumer protections. And as my colleague Representative Garofalo likes to say, no Minnesotan should have to go to Iowa to have fun.
But he does
very often. You are right, Representative Dowd. And Madam Chair, we do have, I think there are a number of people who wish to testify to the bill, so maybe in the interest of time, I'll just leave it at that and be happy to answer questions once we get through the testifiers.
All right, so first on the list, we have Andy Plato, Executive Director with Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Plato, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. On behalf of MIGA's 9 member tribes, thank you for your work on House File 2000, a bill to legalize sports wagering. Since the Murphy v. NCAA Supreme Court decision in 2018, MIGA tribes and their leaders have monitored the impact legal sports betting has had on existing tribal gaming operations in other states. The experiences and lessons learned elsewhere, including all the states surrounding Minnesota, have helped MIGA tribes understand just how important the details and structure of legislation authorizing sports wagering are to existing gaming interests like tribal governments. Were House File 2000, as currently drafted, to become law, MIGA tribes believe the resulting mobile and retail markets operated by Minnesota's tribal nations would not only support tribes, but would also provide well-regulated and accessible options for the state's sports bettors and a competitive market that is important to our state's professional sports teams and market partners. Gaming revenues produce the essential tax base tribes rely on to fund basic and essential government services for thousands of tribal members. Therefore, anytime the state changes the gaming landscape, tribes must carefully consider whether such proposals strengthen or in fact threaten tribal sovereignty and self-determination. MIGA tribes look forward to continually monitoring the bill's progress and offering refinements to improve the language as it moves through the process. MIGA, its members and representatives, again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your recognition that tribal gaming deserves to be protected and must be preserved. As this proposal moves through the legislature, we look forward to working with you and other stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plato. We do have a number of testifiers from the public signed up, so we're hopeful. We have another bill yet on the agenda for the day, so we're hopeful that people can keep their testimony to about 2 minutes. We have David Prestwood on the list, followed by Jake Grassel. You can introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Stevenson, Vice Chair Cotiza-Watoon, Republican Leader Driscoll, all members of the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you for your time this afternoon. My name is David Prestwood. I'm Government Affairs Manager for DraftKings, and I'm here today to provide testimony on behalf of DraftKings in support of House File 2000 relating to sports wagering. We appreciate the opportunity to participate in today's hearing and in additional conversations to discuss the importance of Minnesota embracing a competitive, fully functional sports wagering market. DraftKings is a digital sports and entertainment gaming company created to fuel the competitive spirit of sports fans with products that range across daily fantasy, regulated gaming, and digital media. We're headquartered in Boston and launched in 2012, and our sports book is live with mobile and/or retail sports betting in 22 states. DraftKings supports a sports wagering framework in Minnesota that protects consumers, generates revenue for the state, and stamps out the pervasive illegal sports wagering market. Sports wagering is not new to Minnesota. An estimated 1.17 million people in the state are making a combined total of more than $2.5 billion in sports wagers annually on the illegal market. Nearly all of these wagers are placed online in this robust illegal market where sophisticated illegal operators capitalize on the popularity of this form of entertainment. Fortunately, across the country, states are bringing this activity into legal regulated markets that mandate robust consumer protections. To date, 36 states have legalized sports betting, including 21 that have authorized mobile sports betting. As Minnesota debates converting the illegal sports betting market, we encourage you to do so in a manner that provides smart consumer protections endorsed by the National Council on Problem Gambling. A successful legal market has to provide a better, safer, and accessible product, and creating artificial and unique barriers will ensure that Minnesotans keep betting in the illegal market, a market that has zero consumer protections. We look forward to working together to ensure this bill will bring bettors into the legal, regulated, and taxed market. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next, we have Jake Grassel, followed by Leah Patton. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. I am Jake Grassel. I'm here today on behalf of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion to speak in opposition to House File 2000. I've had this testimony done about 10 times in the last 3 years as we've stood in opposition. This bill simply purports, as we just heard, to be a regulatory mechanism to bring illegal gambling out of the shadows. Unfortunately, what it is the largest expansion of gambling in the state in the past 40 years. For the first time in our state's history, we are looking to legalize online betting, and gamblers who bet online have higher problem gambling rates, about 18.2%, and further sports bettors have higher problem gambling rates at 5.7% compared with adults that bet at casinos, bought lottery tickets, raffle tickets, private bets, etc. The annual costs to our state are great, and they cannot be ignored. We will discuss those in finance properly where they are. But who will bear these costs and who will this burden take on? Generally in gambling, it is those who least can afford to take on the burden. So we ask that you reconsider your support of this. We're fully cognizant of the support this bill has from the industry players. And we really want to work more with the chairman to put some additional guardrails. We do appreciate some of the guardrails that were put on last session, but I believe we can find some additional ones that will make this a better bill if it is to go forward. But as this is the largest expansion of gambling, I would please encourage you to just take a step back and say, no, not now, not on the backs of those who can least afford it. So I'd encourage you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Leah Patton, you can approach the bench, introduce yourself, and proceed. Next, we have Randy Sampson.
All right. Madam Chair and members, my name is Leah Patton, and I am Executive Director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. JRLC is a statewide coalition formed through the partnership of our four sponsoring faith organizations, the Islamic Center of Minnesota, the Jewish Community Relations Council, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, and the Minnesota Coalition of Churches. As people of faith, we advocate alongside our neighbors of differing religious backgrounds to address poverty, uphold the dignity of overlooked communities, and mitigate societal harm. I'm here to testify in opposition to House File 2000. Legalizing sports betting, daily fantasy sports, and mobile gaming will bring access to gambling into every home, school, and workplace in our state 24 hours a day. We believe this will create more problem gamblers and intensify the struggle of those already dealing with gambling addictions. This issue does not just impact the person dealing with addiction, but it can also create severe financial and emotional hardship for their families as well. The University of Minnesota reports that college students are 2 to 3 times more likely to develop problem gambling than older adults. And with 24-hour access to online betting, we are concerned that this will increase the number of young people dealing with compulsive gambling. Though we oppose the passage of this bill, we would like to acknowledge Chair Stevenson for actively listening to our concerns and placing safeguards in this bill to mitigate its negative societal impacts. These measures include restricting the gambling age to 21 and over, prohibiting targeted advertising to people under the age of 21, implementing a 3-hour cool down period after depositing money with a betting website before it can be wagered, and increasing resources for families and funding addiction recovery supports. While we oppose the passage of House File 2000, we sincerely thank Chair Stevenson for working with us on this issue and making this bill less harmful than it would otherwise have been. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Randy Sampson, you can come up, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony. And finally, we have Tracy Wilson after that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Randy Sampson. I'm the chairman and CEO of Canterbury Park. So I'm here representing the racetrack and our horsemen today. Since the Minnesota voters approved a 1992 constitutional amendment allowing pari-mutuel betting on horse racing, we've seen the introduction and growth of successful tribal casinos and 2 successful racetracks with card rooms that support purses. This approach has resulted in economic benefits that have reached all corners of the state, and we feel strongly that any effort to add sports betting to the gaming options in Minnesota needs to include input from the tracks as well as the tribal governments and the sports teams. For the horse industry nationally, continued success comes from complementary gaming options that are used to grow and sustain purses that attract investments by breeders, owners, and trainers. Adding new gaming options at Canterbury has never proved to be a threat to the tribal gaming, and these options just provide a different type of economic development. On the other hand, ignoring horse racing when considering new forms of gaming can cause the loss of significant economic benefits to the Minnesota horse industry and to the state of Minnesota. Our message has consistently been that the horse racing industry is an important stakeholder in the Minnesota gaming industry and should be at the table and part of the discussions on the best way for the state to implement sports betting. We currently can't support this bill in its current form as it does not take into account the needs of the horse industry. However, I do appreciate that Representative Tabke has reached out to Canterbury Park, and we've begun some discussions regarding options for providing resources to support the horse industry and economic benefits, you know, that will benefit horse racing in Minnesota. We believe a bill that provides benefits to horse racing as well as tribal governments and sports teams will provide the broadest possible economic benefits to the state. If all the stakeholders are at the table, I'm confident that we can find solutions that will be a win-win-win for the tribes, teams, and tracks. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Tracy Wilson? And then if there is any other member of the public who wishes to testify after Ms. Wilson. Mr. Chair, it might be helpful to move that chair just over a little bit for her. You can introduce yourself for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chair, Chairman Stevenson, and members of the committee for letting me speak today. My name is Tracy Wilson, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Running Aces, located in the city of Columbus in Anoka County. My goal is to provide testimony today showing the importance of treating the racetracks equally with the Native American casinos with regards to the sports betting bill. I want to make sure everyone understands that the Minnesota racing industry has already been taking sports bets on horse racing since the mid-80s when it was legalized. In 1982, Minnesotans approved sports wagering on horse racing by 64% majority. Specifically, Running Aces has taken over 10 million sports bets on horse racing alone since opening in April of 2008. Canterbury has been taking sports bets on horse racing for almost 40 years. The horse racing industry is estimated to bring an economic benefit of over $500 million to the state of Minnesota. Specifically, Running Aces employs over 530 employees with our casino hotel and racetrack, with an additional 75 seasonal employees supporting an estimated annualized payroll over $27 million. Running Aces has offered advanced deposit wagering, ADW, since 2016. This was a law passed in 2016 which utilizes the same technology and some of the same vendors being considered for sports betting today. Advanced deposit wagering allows Minnesotans the ability to bet on horse racing from mobile devices. Online sports betting is projected to represent 80 to 90% of the revenue produced by sports betting. Running Aces is already experienced with offering sports wagering and account wagering operations. The tote machines and the mobile device technology used at the track to take horse racing bets is already capable of handling sports betting. Running Aces is regulated by the Minnesota Racing Commission. The MRC is physically located at our track, which includes a full-time investigator, in addition to all of the other regulatory positions. In addition, the MRC auditor receives daily reports from us. Sports betting represents the largest expansion of gaming in Minnesota in the last 40 years. If this bill is passed, all constituents, the tracks and Native American casinos, need to be treated fairly. Minnesotans overwhelmingly agree. According to an April 2022 KSTP survey USA poll, 57% of respondents say they support sports betting in Native American casinos and the state's two racetracks. Just 7% of respondents support sports betting only at Native American casinos. In summary, if our racetrack is excluded from sports betting expansion, this will endanger the future of our over $500 million racing industry in Minnesota. We are asking today for parity and basic fairness. Thank you for listening and learning more about Running Aces. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify on the bill today? Right. Seeing none, we do have a couple amendments. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move and describe the A1 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the A1 amendment, ladies and gentlemen, gets to a more global issue that I've had for a while, and we've started to hear a little bit in testimony today. And what the issues are is we have, like we did last year, kind of the colliding of worlds with alcohol. This year we kind of have the colliding of worlds with gaming. We continue to have the perennial problem for charitable gaming, where they are taxed at an extremely high rate, and those are gaming operations that are run by your local legions, VFWs, ball clubs, hockey groups, and the like in your communities that help them to be able to basically do what they need to do in their operations and to help kids and others within our community to do good things. The second thing that we're looking at is the Viking Stadium, which is funded by the ePoolTab program, is about to sunset, where we have enough money, we believe, to be able to pay off those bonds. And so the question becomes, what does the legislature do with the ePoolTab related money? And the third thing that we've got is the new kid on the block, if you will, and that is the issue of sportsbook betting. And I will tell you that I'm not opposed to the concept, but I'm very in favor of a level and fair playing field for everyone. Anyone and everyone knows that there's only a limited number of dollars that are available for everything. And when you go and introduce a new player into to the pot, what ends up happening is those revenues get shared with another player or competitor for those entertainment dollars in this case. And so what the A1 amendment does is it asks for an evaluation to find out if there's going to be a drop in revenues based on actual hard dollars year over year at the time that this bill goes into place. And if it does, that we would then look at making the charitable gaming folks whole by helping them with some offsets. I'm not going to ask the members to vote on this bill or this amendment. I'm just introducing it for conversation to make sure that we are early on in this discussion and process, understanding that we have three moving parts and that all three of those parts really need to be addressed together and not individually in silos like a lot of things have been happening this session from my observations. There is a cause and effect, and again, I think I've done a fairly good job of laying out what the cause and effect would be here on this. And so, Madam Chair, with that, I withdraw the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. He withdraws the A1 amendment. Chair Stevenson, do you have a follow-up?
I do, only because Representative O'Driscoll said he wanted to start a conversation, and I'll start by saying I think it's kind of amusing to me, having heard my friends talk about how much they don't like seeing bills moved together and that they'd rather see things dealt with separately, that now the idea is that maybe we should deal with things more. We don't like that you're doing everything separately, and we'd like you to do everything together. I would say that I do not support settling the e-pull tab issue in conjunction with the sports betting issue. I think that those are different issues that should be handled differently. I'm glad you're withdrawing this amendment today. I think it, in particularly with regard to the decision that the Court of Appeals issued today on rendering some of the practices at the Gambling Control Board with regard to e-poll tabs is operating off of unpromulgated rules that were declared void and sent in the Court of Appeals decision. I think it's not the right time to be considering tax cuts in connection with this bill. We need to have a different discussion about that entire issue, and I think it's probably in everyone's best interest to set that aside to a different place of conversation. So I don't support including it. I'm glad you're withdrawing it. We are going to probably continue to talk about e-pull tabs this year, especially after the Court of Appeals decision today.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Stevenson and the author of the bill. To the point of things moving together and differently, these are all three things that are gaming related, and I could assist your caucus if you wanted to group some things together to help be able to move things faster in that endeavor. I'm happy to do so. And this is maybe one of those areas. And again, open invitation to help you to help prioritize bills if you are interested in that.
Thank you for that generous offer, Representative O'Driscoll. Would you like to move and offer the A4 amendment?
No, at this time, again, I think I've made my point very clear as to what I'm looking at and what I'm attempting to try to do here today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll has withdrawn the A4. We will move to member discussion and questions at this point. I have Representative Tabke on the list.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Katiza-Watoon. I just wanted to piggyback, so say thanks to Chair Stevenson for this and piggyback on what Mr. Sampson from Canterbury Park had to say, is that we are working together on a path forward for tracks and making sure that everyone is included, and we're making good progress as we hope to offer that into the future, and we'll keep everyone up to date as that goes. So thank you very much. Just wanted to let everyone know that we are working on a deal for that. So thank you.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think this is an idea whose time has come, and I know, Mr. Chair, you and I have had that conversation. I want to see this happen. But when I think about the complexity of gambling, it reminds me of alcohol in the state. And so I'm in the camp of wanting to settle all these things together. When we open up the alcohol can, we don't look at just one thing. We look at the...
I think it's called a keg, sir.
Okay. Keg can. When we open that up, we look at all facets of that. And so, you know, I heard Micah say earlier, protect and preserve what we have. I like that. I think we need to do the same thing for the tracks. And I think we need to do the same thing for our charities. And so I as much as I want to see this happen, I don't support it in this format. And I understand you find it amusing that we want to tie some things together now, but I really think we need to look at all those things as a package versus just one at a time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Chair Stevenson?
I appreciate the comment, Representative Farr, and I do, you know, I think both on the alcohol bill, on the cannabis bill, on this bill, my door has always been open to all stakeholders, and I've always tried to reach as broad a degree of consensus as we possibly can. This bill already has a remarkable amount of consensus. You know, I think that to a lot of people, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying a lot of people in the outside world, you maybe think of the tribes as a monolith, but there are 11 of them, and they all have a different perspective. And so I there's a lot of consensus even just there. And then you add in the professional sports teams, all of whom support this bill, and the feedback we've gotten from the university and from problem gambling groups and from all sorts of other groups. So there already is a lot in this bill, but I'm always open to more, and that's why I'm you know, encouraged by Representative Tabke's work with the tracks. I do think charitable gambling is a different thing altogether, and I don't think it belongs in this bill. I think that there are there's a lot going on there between the tax issues, the issues connected to the stadium, and then the regulatory issues. And that is a discussion that we need to have, but not in this bill. And if that means that I can't earn your support, I'm not going to have it, because it's not going to be in this bill.
Members, any further questions or comments to House File 2000? Okay. Seeing none. Oh, Representative
Madam Chair,
O'Driscoll.
I would like a roll call vote, please.
Representative O'Driscoll has requested a roll call vote. Mr. Chair, I'll let you close.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the great discussion today. And it's going to continue. We have multiple committee stops here, you know, and I think that there's a lot more work to be done, and I look forward to it. So I'd ask for a yes vote today.
Very good. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. GOP lead O'Driscoll.
No.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Cha.
Aye.
Cha, aye. Representative Doubt.
No.
Doubt, no. Representative Dotseth is not here. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft, aye. Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Niska.
No.
Niska, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Farr.
No.
Farr, no. Representative Tabke.
Yes.
Tabke, aye.
To Chair Stevenson's motion that House File 2000 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee, there are 10 ayes and 6 nays. The motion prevails, and House File 2000 is recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. I will give the gavel back to Mr. Chair.
All right, the next item on our agenda is the most difficult and controversial bill of the day, House File 665 from Representative Bliss, who I see is making his way down. While he does so, I will move House File 665 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And Representative Bliss, Your bill changes one word. I'll give you more than one word, but not many more, to describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my reelection bill, so I appreciate the time. Back in 2018, we found that some people were taking advantage of our veterans and giving them some loans and dimes to the dollars on what their benefits were worth. So we made a change, and we had an oversight in a word, and I'll let Mr. Elwood speak to that.
Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, members, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Excuse me. I appreciate Representative Bliss bringing the bill forward and appreciate his original bill because it was one of the most important consumer protection bills that this legislature has done to protect service members and veterans. This is simply an engrossing error. The remedies section should have provided both legal and equitable relief. And somehow the and got twisted into an or when it became law, and we're just switching it back so that anybody aggrieved by this would have the opportunity to both get compensated for harm done, for monetary harm, and also to get equitable relief for rescission of contract, et cetera, injunction, et cetera, et cetera. And it's as simple as that.
All right. Any members of the public wishing to testify to this bill? Seeing none, member discussion to the bill. Seeing none, Representative Bliss, any final words?
Thank you for the tough questions, and I appreciate your support.
All right. I will renew my motion that House File 665 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and House File 665 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Bliss. And with 20-some minutes left in the hearing, I have nothing further on the agenda. And with that, we will adjourn.